Welcome back. All right, I thought we'd open up the lines, and we can keep this going in the rock and roll vein if you'd like, but you climb on into the co-pilot seat and help steer the ship clear on through till morning. But I thought it might be fun to share some of your great rock moments, maybe a live concert, maybe a brush with greatness, maybe you met one of the legends, or we can go sort of paranormal in this rock and roll arena as well. Maybe you've got a ghost rock and roll story. I'm just thinking of my pal, Matt Swain, who has really picked up the mantle of our Gary Patterson in documenting great stories involving the paranormal, the supernatural, and rock and roll. He's got a couple of great books out, Haunted Rock and Roll and More Haunted Rock and Roll. And maybe you've had an experience with, as I mentioned earlier, Jimmy Morrison's ghost is said to haunt a particular Mexican restaurant in the Venice Beach area of California. And I believe that restaurant was once the Doors recording studio, makeshift recording studio, or rehearsal studio. If you've got a story like that, I would love to hear it. I'm all ears, and we'll do that in just a moment. Just, I wanted to give you a heads up. George Norrie, so many live events coming. This one is not till early 2019, but I wanted to let you know now because tickets are going to go fast. And it's happening in January, Jan 25th to the 26th in beautiful Big Bear Lake, California. I've been there. It's just an amazing place. And you can join George along with such presenters as Stanton Friedman and Rosemary Ellen Guiley and Nick Redfern, Grant Cameron, Tom Danheiser, of course, Dr. Sky and others. Further details, well, they'll be announced soon. Just keep checking coasttocoastam.com under the events in the menu. Alien Snowfest 2, Big Bear Lake, Jan 25, 26, 2019. Forewarned, forearmed. Your phone calls. Open lines when Coast to Coast continues right after this. Welcome back to Coast AM. Richard Serrett sitting in for George Norrie. A great delight and honor to be with you tonight, this morning. And I thought for the next 2 hours, we could kick around some maybe brushes with rock greatness or encounters with ghosts from the world of rock and roll. Let's start with Franna in Clearwater, Florida. Hello, Franna. Welcome.
Richard?
Hi there.
I'm calling with a nightmare of a different sort.
Oh.
George's call screener, Tommy, suggested I call to ask this favor of coach listeners.
Okay.
I came home to take care of my grandmother when she had Alzheimer's. After she passed, my parents became ill, and I took care of them. And when everyone had gone, I fell apart, and then shortly after, my roof fell in.
Oh, dear.
And I'm in a situation now that I really need a small favor from Coast listeners who are interested. I'm on very limited income, and I have become a finalist in a contest for a free roof. And
okay.
The free roof is by a group called NoRoofLeftBehind.com, www.NoRoofLeftBehind.com. And all they ask for you to do to vote for me is you go to your computer, pull up NoRoofLeftBehind.com. I'm sorry, I'm nervous.
That's okay.
Okay, you pull that up, and it'll say, ask you what area you want, and you enter my zip code, 33755.
33755.
Yes. And you enter the zip code, and it'll bring up four houses in this area. This is Clearwater, Florida, where I am. And my house is the only one with a blue tarp, and it says, pick me under it. And that's the code word that you approve, pick me, with a blue tarp.
All right. And all right. And just explain how you lost your roof, Fran.
How did I lose it?
Yes.
Well, the hurricane didn't help the last few hurricanes
right. We've
had. But one thing after another, including varmints coming in the house. I'm beside myself.
Oh, dear.
It's a nightmare. It's virtually a nightmare. So anyway,
how much would a new roof cost? Do you know?
A simple roof could be about $15,000, but with the damage under it, with the ceiling and the bathroom and a little bit in the bedroom, it mounts to more than that. I need soffit and fascia. Now, they won't do the inner, but I can come up with the rest, I think, if I can get enough in this contest to get me started. You know, it's like I can't do everything. I'll lose
the
house.
So again, it's noroofleftbehind.com, and then it'll ask you to enter the zip code, and that's 33755, and that's for Clearwater, Florida, 33755, and then you'll see four houses sort of in that zip code in need of a roof, and yours is the only one with that blue tarp, and then you use that code, the code words, pick me.
Pick me. Yeah, it'll say that on it, pick me. Okay, and it's one vote per email address. So if a listener has three email addresses, they can vote three times.
All right, let's see if we can't get you that new roof, Rana.
Oh, my
God. All the best.
One other thing. One other thing you need to tell them, okay?
Okay.
After they have voted, they will get an email back very quickly, and the email tells them to go back to their computer and affirm their vote. And as soon as they do that, they'll get a thank you from the roofing company that is holding this contest. But
all right.
They have to do that. They have to give them their email address when it asks for it, and they have to answer the email that comes back to them and affirm that, yes, they voted for me.
Okay. All right, Coast listeners, let's get behind Franna on this one. God bless, Franna. Thank you. All right, let's say hi to... Mark is in Sacramento, west of the Rockies. Mark, good morning. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hi, Richard. How are you doing tonight?
I'm very well. Yourself?
Good. Yeah, I'm doing just fine.
Wonderful.
Just fine. And I just want to say before we get started a little bit that as a guest host of the show, you are an outstanding host. You have a very good command of the English language, and you have a great radio voice and radio vibe about you. So you're doing an outstanding job.
Thank you, Mark. That's very kind. It's all done with mirrors.
I'll tell you, though, I want to say just a little something to the Coast to Coast family and all those who take and field the calls. Through the years I've been a fan, listen to the show, and boy, you get some doozies on there. People who call in and have stories and all that. And I'm not picking on anybody in particular. I just mean I've really heard some guests come over the airwaves.
Well, I tell you, just very quickly, I had one of the most amazing calls last Friday on Open Lines. I don't know if you all remember this. This was a, since we're all talking ghost stories and things tonight, this woman was an operator, switchboard operator. Uh-huh. I guess this was back, I don't know, maybe in the 70s. And she called in to tell us about receiving a call from a woman who was frantic because she felt her daughter was in danger. She asked the switchboard operator to call her daughter's house to warn her that her father, this woman's ex-husband, was coming over to her house. He had just been released from prison. She feared for her daughter's life. She called the switchboard. The switchboard operator who called in to this show, I called the number that was provided, and the phone rang, and it rang, and it rang, and it rang, and it rang, and finally, a man answered. It was a police officer who had just come onto the scene, asked who it was. She explained him, a switchboard operator. The mother of the woman living in that house called me. She was in fear for her daughter's life. Her father was coming from prison, and he said, wow. I burst through the door, and I found this man ready to step on this young girl's head. And when I came through the door and the phone was ringing and he was startled and he ran off and he said, now, by the way, who did you say called to warn you? Well, the girl's mother. She's on the phone now. And the police officer said, well, I asked her about if she had any other relatives, and she said her mother had died 7 years earlier. When the switchboard operator.
Yeah.
And these are the old switchboards where you would actually take a, you know, you would plug something in. She found that cord was not connected to anything in the back of the switchboard.
Wow. Yeah.
Remarkable. Yeah. Anyway, that's just a testament to the kind of calls we get here.
Oh yeah, no, I got to say they're all the way across the board. They're some of the callers that call in. So you are asking people to call in about some stories. And I happen to be a huge music fan. I've been involved in music since a young age, played in bands locally here in my town here in Sacramento. And we even got on the radio with the band that I was in. And from that, I got to meet and become friends with one of the bigger bands out of Sacramento, which is Tesla Rock Band.
Oh, yes.
Gone on
yes.
Now to, yeah, to become very successful. And I met Frank and became good close friends with him and met the band. And then from there, I have some friends who sell and are in the music trade of selling instruments and whatnot. And I became friends and got to know Blue Oyster Cult, the guys in Blue Oyster Cult, which
oh,
I always
right.
was a fan of since I was a kid. Yeah.
Sure.
Or Don't Fear the Reaper. You know the band.
That is a classic coast-to-coast tune, bumper music. If ever there was a song... and it was later used by Rob Lowe on his A&E show, The Lowe Files.
Yes, yeah. And, you know, not that that's the story I called in about. I'll jump to the story real quick, but not to hog up the radio time. But I was backstage once with them in San Francisco. They came to play in the 90s, middle 90s, and they were walking around backstage, and Buck was there, and he had acoustic guitar on him, and he was wandering back and forth. And I just reached out my hand because they knew me. And I slapped him on the back. I said, Buck, you've got to show me how to play that. I always play it, and it just doesn't sound quite right. There's one note that I'm not either picking or jumping back to. And just a wonderful guy. He turned around, held the guitar up at an angle so I could see, and he said, here's how it's played. And he did one note at a time, you know, bum, 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 bum.
Right,
and,
right.
For that, I'm forever grateful. A wonderful guy. And the band, too. They're all nice guys. But the
great
story
to hear.
I have for you, the story I have for you real quick is this one. John Entwistle from The Who, one of the greatest bass players. And you won't argue with me on that one.
No, no. With that that fretless bass of his.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
No. I was just commenting on the type of bass he played. It was a fretless bass, right?
Oh, yeah. And he had a collection that was just unbelievable. I think in one of the documentaries on The Who, they show a video shot of him walking through a house downstairs, and there's basses and guitars just lining the walls. And that's not a made-up thing. That's actually his house. That's how he had part of his house. And from what I understand, after he passed, yeah, his collection was just ominous. I mean, just massive, hundreds of guitars and hundreds of basses. But he had a solo project when The Who was not touring. Because as in later years they went on, they kind of only toured intermittently.
Right.
He
Ox.
Was a voracious player, so he started his own little group, came to Sacramento and played, and I went there to see him play, and I knew the guys running the sound and doing the lights at the club that he was at. So I was lucky enough to be invited on his bus. We went on the tour bus with him after the show, and we were sitting around talking, having a little cocktails, getting rosy-cheeked, you know, and laughing and giggling. And I said to him, I said, John, I got to ask you something. You know the Monterey Pop Festival where you and Jimi Hendrix played? Hendrix, that was his big show, and you guys had never played before in the United States. That was your first U.S. gig, and it was a big deal. I said, I know, according to the documentaries, that there was an argument between Pete Townsend and Jimi Hendrix about who would play first. And Jimi Hendrix did not want to go on second. He didn't want to go on after The Who because he knew that they were going to blow up the stage and wreck all their gear. And that was part of some of Jimi's shtick. And so, of course, The Who said, well, we're not going to follow you. And Jimi Hendrix said, well, I'm not going to follow you. So there was an altercation, and I guess it got heated. And according to the documentaries, it's this ridiculous story that Pete Townsend says where Jimi got up on a chair, pulled out his guitar that he had on him anyway, not even plugged in, and just started playing some stuff that they, just amazing guitar, and then he jumped on the chair and said, well, I'm going to go first, and that's the way it is, and I'm going to pull out all the stops. And whatever it was, but I asked John, I said, John, is that true? It just sounds so silly. And he said, no, it's not true. That's not really what happened. I said, what happened? He said, well, they got heated between Jimi Hendrix and Pete, and it came to blows. And Jimi actually clocked Pete a good one and punched him and knocked him down. And that's how
the
argument was settled. Yeah.
Wow.
That's how the argument was settled. And I guess out of respect for Hendrix, I guess when they did that documentary and they talked to Pete Townsend about it, he said, well, you know, he came up with that story, in other words, you know, not to say that Jimi Hendrix punched him in the face and knocked him down. he was polite about it and came up with that silly story. And I thought it was. I thought that's too silly of a story to be true, you know.
Very classy.
Yeah,
very
just,
classy.
I thought that was a great story to share with you and all the listeners.
It is a terrific story. Thank you, Mark, in Sacramento. I appreciate that. I love the, that inside, those inside anecdotes that you don't hear very often. But again, Coast to Coast audience coming to the fore. Let's see. We've got John in Williams, Iowa. John, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Hey, I got a great campfire going in the yard here with big logs and orange warm coals, and I'm really enjoying your Grateful Dead discussion. And Richard, you're a good host. And you know what? I just want to say the U.S. loves Canada. You guys are a great border up there, and you've given us Rush, Captain Kirk, and Red Green.
That's it. Keep your stick on the ice. Keep your stick on the ice.
Yeah, that's right. And the duct tape really works down here in the U.S. too. So thank you, Canada. God bless you, Richard. And so I'm got a brush with musical greatness here. So I'm currently in a Bible study with a guy named Kerry Livgren. He was in a group called Kansas.
Oh yes.
And he did a lot of a lot of other really good music and everything. And I just want to say that when I show up, that he's like really at peace. And he loves his wife, and he's normal, and he's really smart, and he's still making music, and he just, like, he teaches this Bible study. And I just want to say that he's one of these guys that life really seems to have turned out well for him. I mean, he's in his 70s, I think, and he still looks pretty the same. He's still got his scraggly beard because he's from Kansas. That's how they are there, you know. But I just want to tell you and everybody that he teaches the Bible and he loves the Lord and he's really normal. And he's like one of these guys that's coming in for a landing, and whatever he's encountered, and I'm going to call it the Lord, he's just really grounded. And I just really admire him. And he was teaching this study. Like, we're talking about liberty. What is the nature of liberty in this Bible study? Like, personal freedom and how God respects the choice of the individual, even though life is hard. And he's really philosophical, but he's just so normal. And he's just, you know, a very, you know, life worked out for him.
Well, the weekend producer here at Coast, Chris Burrows, is a huge Kansas fan, so I'm sure he's listening to this and enjoying it immensely. Now, I think, did Kansas not recently reform? I don't know if your Bible instructor is in on that action or not, but I think they're back out there doing their thing, the great prog rock band Kansas. All right, we'll take more of your calls. Thank you for that one. Great story. Back with more Rock Talk here on Coast to Coast AM. I'm Richard Serrett. We're talking about brushes with rock greatness, or maybe you have a rock and roll ghost story. You know, Elvis has apparently been quite busy since making his way to the great beyond, at least if you accept the multiple reports from true believers who claim to have seen him lingering the hallways at Graceland. Also, the former RCA Studios in Nashville. If you haven't been there, check it out. Get it down to Nashville. And a lot of when Elvis wasn't recording in Los Angeles or in the jungle room at Graceland, he was at RCA Studios. And some speculate that if he's not dead, maybe, or if he is dead, maybe it's Andy Kaufman. Maybe Elvis is Andy Kaufman. But then some people don't think Andy Kaufman's dead either. A great story, too, about Dan Aykroyd, a fellow Canuck who resides a few hours north of Toronto, I believe, up near Kingston. And his Los Angeles home, he believes, and he's a real-life ghostbuster, right? He really believes in the paranormal, and he believes that the late Cass Elliot of the Mamas and Papas is haunting that L.A. home, and she lived there before he did, so he may be onto something. All right, your rock stories, brushes with rock greatness or rock ghost stories on the other side. Just a reminder that tonight into Sunday morning, I'll be back in the air chair with the publisher of WorldNet Daily, WND.com. Joseph Farah, the publisher and founder. He'll talk about the war against alternative news and what really went down in the Garden of Eden. Best-selling author Carl Gallups will join me for the final 3 hours. His latest book is The Gods of Ground Zero. That's all coming up tonight into Sunday morning on Coast to Coast. We'll be right back with your call. Stay with us. Welcome back. Let's say hi to Michael in Virginia Beach, Virginia, on the Wild Card Line. Michael, good morning. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Good morning, Richard. You're doing a wonderful job, as always.
Thank you.
Richard, the most exciting rock and roll ghost story that I can tell you, I can tell you very briefly. 1964, as the Beatles. That's the name of the group. They appear here at the Harbor Fest Festival every June, early June, in Norfolk. If you didn't like the Beatles or weren't that excited about them in hearing them on the best recording system that money can buy, the best stereo system that money can buy, go see this group, 1964, as the Beatles. I tell you that the power, the excitement, the attraction of those four men is just beyond description. The magic that's there, you will never catch it on a recording. You have to be there. You have to feel it and see it at the same time, and there's nothing like it. I want to mention another ghost story, though. I think it's the greatest, I'm sure it's the greatest ghost story of all time. I had read it many times and didn't think it was anything so great until I heard Glenn Kimball on Coast to Coast AM in the early 2000s. He talked about that ghost story in Matthew 28, the 28th chapter, where it says that the tombs were open and many that were dead were seen alive in the city. Now, Glenn Kimball went on to explain that that happened all over the Roman Empire, and it created such a panic that it came down to us, it comes down to us today as All Saints Day or Halloween. And this was the original zombie movie, but it was no movie. And so the emperor ordered the sealing of the tombs, according to Glenn Kimball. Now, I began to compare that with the whole scripture, and it explained two things. First of all, it explained what it says about Jacob in the book of Genesis, when he died. It has this strange expression there. The expression was, and he was gathered unto his fathers. And then I heard in 2001, the spring of 2001, on Coast to Coast AM, Dr. Melvin Morris, the author of Into the Light. I called in and spoke to him. I was so moved by him. But here was a man who has seen thousands of people die, and what he explained as an agnostic is that all those people were gathered together with their elder grandparents or parents, that they would come into the room and appear to these people just before they died. Now, here is what comes out of this for me as the bottom line. The whole Christian world has missed this. Only Christians listening to Coast have any glimpse of what this is talking about. If we are to be gathered together with our fathers, we have a reason to honor our father and mother, not only in this life, but in the afterlife. And when we talk about great reunions of great bands, we're talking about the necessity of unity itself. You create something as a team which no one person can ever reproduce. So it's important to keep the team together and to regather the team at some point in the future. I think what we are seeing, and I can't wait for Kyle Gallup's tomorrow night, I think what we are seeing in all of these spaceships that we talk about on Coast to Coast are our fathers petitioning to regather with us in exactly the way that Jesus Christ promised that it would happen, that he would bring thousands of his saints. We have to blend in with the generation that brought us forward if we are going to get these ships to respond to us in a meaningful way. But the Bible says it is only the believers, those in Christ, who will have this power to connect with those ships, and that the rest of the dead will have no such access. So I hope we can begin a discussion here on Coast to Coast with you and Carl Gallup tomorrow night and many other nights to come.
Michael, thank you so much for that. Well, Carl will be here for 3 hours tomorrow night, or tonight, I should say, and he's going to let us know what really went down in the Garden of Eden. Chris is in New York, first-time caller. Hey, Chris, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Hello?
Hi there.
Oh, how you doing? Yeah, this is Chris from Buffalo.
Chris from Buffalo.
Can you hear me?
I can, loud and clear. What's on your mind, Chris?
I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller.
Well, welcome aboard and thank you.
So I'm calling about my experience with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. A few years back, I went to the Hall of Fame, and I got, like, this weird feeling. I've had this feeling before with, like, spirits and, like, this very uneasiness around me when I walked into the Hall of Fame, to the point where I could barely even stay in there anymore. And I'm wondering if any other callers have felt the same way.
In Cleveland. And do you remember which part of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame you were in? Were you near a particular exhibit, or did you just walk in the entrance and feel it immediately?
It was sort of immediate when so when you go in there, it sort of, the exhibit starts from, like, the beginning with, like, Robert Johnson stuff and like his old guitars and stuff, and right from that instance I sort of felt that uneasiness, and so what I was thinking is you know, some entities or spirits, you know, followed the instruments in there. And it was almost like a feeling like they wanted to escape, you know, like they were stuck there, not being played.
Right. Well, it's interesting that you felt that immediately upon sort of seeing the Robert Johnson exhibit. Of course, the Curse of the Crossroads. Just I have had a number of conversations on air about the Crossroads, and three that immediately come to mind, and in each case something went wrong. Our Gary Patterson was on my weekday show, and we were talking about his trip down to the Crossroads. He made a pilgrimage down there to gather some dirt from I guess the intersection of old Highway 61 and 48, and he started to tell me this story and all the things that were happening to him. His fraternity brother, one of them had an aneurysm upon returning home, and another had a heart attack, and so on and so forth. It was just this incredible story. But as he's telling me this, he got knocked off the air, and my computer went haywire. And a couple of years after that, Matt Swain was on a podcast of mine, and we were talking about the Crossroads. We did the entire interview. I recorded it, about 40 minutes. It sounded great through my earphones. After I hung up the phone and I went to play it back, and it was all garbled. the entire interview for no, it never happened to me before. It was all garbled. Then I had Matt on Coast to Coast a couple of months ago, and we started talking about Robert Johnson and the Curse of the Crossroads. We got knocked off the air for 10 or 15 minutes. I don't know if Dan, back in the, in L.A., whether you were on the board that night or I'm not sure who was, what night that was. But anyway, it was crazy. It never happened like that before. Every time I talk about Robert Johnson. So anyway, maybe we're breaking the curse finally, because you and I are talking about it now, Chris, and fingers crossed nothing is happening.
Yeah. So which brings me to my second point, which is I think especially with music and art, you know, you put a lot into that. I'm a musician, so like I know how much you put into your art, and you put a piece of yourself in there, you know. And if the spirits are going to follow anything, it's music, I think.
That's a great point.
Yeah,
very, very good point.
And
well, Chris, thank you. Go ahead.
I don't think the instruments are, you know, made to sit there in a case and not be played.
I think you're right. Thank you for that call. Great call, Chris. Let's say hi to Joe in Long Island. Hey, Joe. Good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Hi, Richard. One of my favorite Coast to Coast callers was the Fourth Horseman of the Apocalypse. That was a fun one. But on music, the Grateful Dead, I don't think they had singles that were top 100 Billboard hits.
No.
At any point.
No, I don't think they ever charted except for Touch of Grey in the late 80s.
Which is kind of interesting for as big a band as that. I know they're a jam band, but were they conscious? I mean, it seems like you had to have a shorter song to would be one thing. It had to be maybe 4 minutes more so than a longer song on average to get on the radio.
Sure, sure. I think it'd tell sort of... album-oriented FM stations, and then, you know, they would play deeper tracks and longer cuts and so forth, particularly if the DJ needed to go for a smoke break. You know, he'd throw on Stairway to Heaven. But you're right. Their songs were not sort of tailor-made for high rotation on a radio station, because, as you say, they were a jam band, and so some of their songs were... they'd just go and go and go, but... despite the lack of airplay, they were, as Joel Selvin mentioned, a huge industry. I mean, I'm talking, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in merchandise and concert tickets and, you know, just a huge, huge industry, like Michael Jackson, Rolling Stone territory, yet they weren't getting any airplay.
Which is interesting, because at that time, I think the radio audience was a big link.
Sure, sure. That's how you found out about the song. So then you went to the record store and you bought the album. I mean, back in those days, DJs had a tremendous, the radio station. Obviously, the DJs weren't programming their own music by this point. It was all sort of formatted. But yeah, back in those days, that was the only sort of outlet. And now, of course, it's all changed. It's people.
You know, my beef has always been, I've heard songs, I didn't catch the name, or the DJ on the radio never said it, and I never heard the song again. And I loved the song, never identified the group or the song. And what I like with this Alexa app is when you stream Pandora or iHeart and you say, Alexa, what's playing? It identifies the song as it's playing and the group. So... as an example, I found this group I like that's actually from, I believe, Toronto or Canada, called Jets Overhead recently, you know, just by doing that.
Oh, there's a great app that my lovely bride, the Mighty Aphrodite, has. And often I'll hear a great song on a commercial that I've never heard before. And she uses this app, and I wish I could remember the name of it, but it'll identify the song for you. So if you're
right
in the car and they're playing the song and the DJ doesn't mention it, if you've got this app, darn, what is the name of that? Can't think of it. It'll come to me later. Anyway, get that app, and that'll your problems will be solved. Joe, great call. Thank you for that. Joe is trucking in Louisiana on the Wild Card Line. Joe, hi there.
Hey, what an honor to speak to you. And I want to say hi to Corny as I'm going through Louisiana. I come through here about twice a week, and I love listening to Corny. And Joe, you disappointed me. You didn't have two questions tonight. Every night I listen that you call in, you always have two.
I may have cut him off too soon.
Oh, okay. it always cracks me up when Joe calls. He always says, "Well, I have two questions or two comments." And anyways, back in the 80s, I used to drive limo in the San Francisco Bay Area. And I used to drive a lot of celebrities, met a lot of people there doing that job. And I've never been really a starstruck type person. So when I drove these people, they were, you know, they put their pants on the same way I did. And, you know, I treated them with respect. But, you know, there was a lot of great people. I drove Huey Lewis for a long time. He was probably one of my favorites. He was just an awesome guy, a lot of respect. And I love him to death. But the story I wanted to share tonight was I drove Journey, the band Journey, to the Paul McCartney concert at the University of Berkeley. And I picked them up. They didn't want to drive in a limo. They wanted a van. They were very respectful, and they didn't want to try to upstage Paul McCartney by coming in a limo. And so I picked them all up and their wives in this 15-passenger van, and we drove to the concert, and we got there, and I lucked out, got a parking spot right up front, let them out of the van, and went to go back in the van. And because typically when you take people to a show or dinner or whatever, you know, you just wait in the limo or wait in the car for them until they're ready to go. And so they turned around and looked at me and says, "What are you doing?" And I told them, I said, "I'm just going to be waiting in the van until you get out of the show." They said, "Oh, no, you're not. We got a ticket for you."
Wow, that's a class act. Great story. Thank you for that. Back with more of your calls right here on Coast to Coast AM.